Okay, we're beginning here on the second to last line on Lamed Zayin Amud Bet. The Gemara asks, "Velo memela mlotichu kofer shma mina." Couldn't we learn this out? This limud that the Brito is bringing us from Kol Cherem to teach us that when we deal with death penalties, there is no monetary punishment in exchange for waiving the death penalty. Then why do I need to learn that out of the pasuk of Kol Cherem? I could have learned that out of Milotichu Kofer. Milotichu Kofer already indicates to us that you can't make payment in exchange for waiving the death penalty or waiving the sentence. So here, over here, we had the bright to bring down. Oh, we had the Mitot HaChamurot and the Mitot HaKalot. And they're all covered by Cherem, Kol Cherem. That should have come out of the pasuk of Milotichu Kofer. The Gemara says, "Lo tishko mimonu minei v'tifterei." The understanding of that pasuk is, don't take money from him, and then exonerate him from the death penalty. So, kol cherem lamali. What do I need kol cherem for? Amar Rami bar Chama itzrich. We need it. Sakadat chamina hani milei heicha deharago derech aliyah. That's only in the case where he killed him in an upward motion. Shelo nitna shiga toli kapara. Because in that instance, there is no kapara bishogeg. He would not be put into galut in that instance. Aval harago derech yirida. In a case where he kills him with a downward motion, the nitna shigagatol de kapara. In that case, if he was a shogeg, he would be entitled to go to galut as a kapara. Ema nishko memonumine v'niftere. Maybe in that case he could pay and be exonerated from the death penalty. Kamash Malon, and that's what Kol Cherem comes to teach us, that that is not the case. Now, as Tosafot points out, in all of these instances, Chamur and Kal take on a different meaning, because in this instance, Derech Aliyah, the reason you don't get Galut is because it's a lighter form of Mitah, not because it's normal Chamur. Derech Yiridah is more Chamur, and that's why you get Galut. The Gemara here clearly sees the differential all about whether you have Kapara B'Shogeg or not Kapara B'Shogeg. And that was true in the Braita before. In the Braita before, it called things that were chamur, that we normally would associate as being kal, and other things that are chamur, being called kal, because Shabbat and Avodah Zarah were considered to be kalim, because they have kapara b'shogeg. Even though those are primary averot, that we would consider to be fundamentals of the faith, nevertheless, the Braita calls those mitot kalot. And mitot chamurot being things where you couldn't have kapara b'shogeg. So as Tosafot points out here, the only measurement that this bright and the Gemara is using here is whether there's kapara b'shogeg or there's no kapara b'shogeg. And the Gemara sees in that the kapara b'shogeg being an ability to somehow waive the sentence or giving you the ability to exonerate him from mitah through mamon. In each of those cases, we reject that understanding because of the pasuk. Again, one pasuk, which is lo tikhu kofer, which teaches us that even b'chiyuv mitah, you cannot take tashlumim. And then the case of Kol Cherem, which says even in cases where there is kapara, you still can't take mamon in order to be mechaper instead of the chiyuv mita. So in Amalei Rova, ha, mitana de Bechizkia nafko. Now wait a minute, that we could have learned out from Tana de Bechizkia, which we've seen before. Derech Aliyah, Derech Yiridah, the differentiation that the Gemara is making, we already from Tana de Bechizkia saw that there is no such distinction, that it's all equated. The Tana de Bechizkia, Make Adam, Umake Behema. The Pasuk says, in the end of Parshat Emor, again, we spent a lot of time on this limud, Make Adam, Umake Behema, they're juxtaposed there. Ma Make Behema, lo chilakta bo, ben shogeg de mezid. Just like by Make Behema, it's irrelevant whether it was done by shogeg or mezid. The person who injures or kills the animal is held accountable. Ben mitkavein l'shenu mitkavein, doesn't matter if he intended or it was an unintentional. Ben derech yirida l'derech aliyah. And there's no difference whether it was an upward motion or a downward motion. The person, in all these cases, is not l'patro mamon, elo l'chaivo mamon. In all these cases, you are obligated to compensate for the loss of the animal, no matter how it happened. No matter any of these distinctions, it's irrelevant. So again, we spoke before that those would explain why each of these distinctions is important. Shogeg mezid is obvious why there would be a distinction. Ben mitkavein l'sh'enu mitkavein is based on the machluk between Rabbi and the Chachamim as to whether when you intend for one object and hit another object, are you held accountable? Will you be subject to the death penalty? And derech aliyah, derech yirida is what we're discussing here. the difference between whether there is galut or there is no galut. Af make adam, so too, the Hekesh brings us to this point that make adam, lo tachlok bo, ben shogeg lemezit, ben mitkavein, lesheinu mitkavein, ben derech yirida, lederech aliyah, lechaivo mamon, lepatro mamon. So just like by make adam, we have an exemption for money. And again, we discussed this earlier. How do you know that you're exempt from money? Because we have kamalei derabba mine. So we know for sure in the case of mezid, he's exempt from paying money. So we know that the tzad by makei adam is that you're patur mi mamon. So just like when you're chayab mamon and behema, there is no distinction. All of these will bring you to the point where you are accountable for the loss. So too, in all these instances, you will also be exempted from paying mamon. So if that's the case, in these cases, it said here, there's no distinction or no differentiation between derech yirida and derech aliyah. If that's the case, how come we're trying to make a distinction between derech aliyah and derech yirida? Tana de'Be'er Chizki already says that it's irrelevant with regards to a person's standing, whether it's kamala derabba mine to poter him from mamon, or whether it's for kapara to paying money to exonerate himself. Neither of those are allowed in this case. El Ama Rami Bar Chama Itzrich. We need it for this. Salka Dat Chamina Hanimil Heicha Disime Et Eino Veharagoba. I would think that's only when he blinded him on the way to killing him, so that he hit him in the eye socket and then ended up killing him through that same motion or that same hit. Heicha Disime Et Eino Veharagoba Davar Acher. In the case where he hit his eye out and then killed him with something else, Rashi says that he punched him in the eye with his other hand, bavat achat, hit him somewhere else that killed him. So maybe over there, ema nishko mamona mine. Maybe over there, he would have to pay. So maybe only in the same motion that kills him, are you exempt from making the monetary payment. Do we say kamle deraba mine? On the other hand, in the case where he injures him and kills him, maybe over there, there will have to be compensation that is made. Samalei Rava, Hanami mi'idach to Tana de Bechizki and Afka, that we also learn out from the other limud of Tana de Bechizkiya. The Tana de Bechizkiya, ayin tachar ayin, v'lo ayin v'nefesh tachar ayin. It's an eye for an eye, and not an eye and a nefesh for an eye. Again, this is in Parshat Mishpatim, connected to the case of Asonia. In the case of the woman who is killed or not killed, and depending on that, the man pays. So that's where we learn how kamlei derabba mine. So there it says, ayin tachat ayin. So the Gemara learns out from that, that ayin tachat ayin really is monetary restitution and not the poking out of the eye of the other individual. How does the Gemara know that? Because it says, ayin tachat ayin. It's an eye for an eye. If you make restitution, then we're certain that you're doing an ayin tachat ayin. If you actually knock out the other guy's eye, it's possible that he might die from that. Or something more will happen when you poke out his eye. There's no way to know that you're doing exactly the same thing that he did to the other individual. Even if he poked out his eye and you poke out this individual's eye, and it seemingly is the same, it may not have been in the same way. It might even not have been the same pain. He may end up dying from it. So that's what the drush is, which is ayin tachat ayin v'lo ayin v'nefesh tachat ayin. And therefore, poking out his eye is not an option. Now, that drasha has nothing to do with what we're speaking about over here. Meaning that the drasha over there simply is telling us that ayin tachat ayin is monetary and not poking at his eye literally. How we get from there to our gramara over here? Rashi says, miu, shmamina mina, dolo tabde beitarte. So as an aside, we also happen to learn this piece, which is, you can't be held accountable for two items. Now, that doesn't mean, or doesn't tell us which of the two items you can't be held accountable for, but at least here we have some sort of drasha. Tosafot. Right. So that's what Tosafot says. So Tosafot says, you know what, it's not from this limud itself of ayin tachat ayin, but as you're from the limud of nefesh tachat nefesh, which is, lav mihay drasha gufa kamar. It's not from that drasha itself that it comes from, but rather it comes out of the drasha nefesh tachat nefesh. And we will darshan nefesh tachat nefesh similarly to the way that we just darshaned ayin tachat ayin, which is v'lo ayin v'nefesh tachat nefesh. And so that's how Tosafot learns it from that limud, or you could learn it out from this limud if you just adjust it slightly, which is ayin tachat ayin v'lo nefesh v'ayin tachat ayin. If you just reverse the nefesh to the ayin, then you would have nefesh first and you would have the same drasha. But anyway, the core drasha has nothing to do with our Gemara. But the Gemara sees in that drasha a secondary impact, which is that we don't give two punishments in these issues. So we don't need the Kol Cherem to teach us that. We would have already learned it out from this kind of debate, Chizkiah.
So if he hits him twice.
Yeah, seemingly, according to Rashi, that's the case, that if he hit him first, and then is obligating the monetary compensation, then kills him, there's no kamala d'rabba mine. And we've seen that before. It's similar to what we learned by stealing on Shabbat. In the case of stealing on Shabbat, we had to have it happen simultaneously in order for him to be granted the kamala d'rabba mine. So Zotavir, it has to be bevat achad for him to grant the kamala d'rabba. If he's already obligating the money, then he's subject to the death penalty. That doesn't help him in terms of kamala d'rabba mine. All right. Ella, amar Rav Ashi itzrich. We need kol cherem for this. I would think because knas in general is a chidush. Knas has no relevance or connection to the actual damage done. It's a singular type of payment no matter what or how and the people involved in the crime. Knas is a fixed amount that is always paid. So since it's a chidush, I would have thought agavagav de mikdal mishalim. Even though he's subject to the death penalty, there is no kamalei d'rabba mine. The fact that it's a chiddush already that you're paying and it's not connected directly to the damage that's done, so too when it comes to kamalei d'rabba mine, the knas will stand even in the face of the chiyuv mita. Kamash malon, that's not the case. And that's what Kol Cherem comes to teach you, that there is an exemption also for kamalei d'rabba mine for knas. Ula rabba. We saw rabba back earlier a number of times in the Gemara. Damar chidushu shechitcha torah b'knas. The Torah has a chiddush by knas and ain't hochanami. Knas will be paid even in the face of a chiyuv mita. There is no kamalei d'rabba mine b'knas. Afagav de mikdal mishalim, and even though he's subject to a death penalty, he will pay. Hai kol cherem mayovile. Then what does he do with kol cherem? Safar la ketana kama de Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya. He will hold like the Tana kama Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya, which on yesterday's daf we saw was that a person who tries to do arachin is marich, someone who is being taken out to his sentencing as a death penalty, that he doesn't pay anything because he is worthless. Now, Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya said he still pays because it's not irrelevant. His value is irrelevant because arachin is all about the tables. How old is he? What gender is he? You pay. Doesn't matter how much he's worth. So even though he's worthless in the sense that he's going out to chiyuv mita to be sentenced to death, nevertheless, you pay the arachin. But the Tana Kama says it does make a difference. That's true when the person is, quote-unquote, still alive. As long as he still has some value, then arachim are relevant. But in a case where he's being put out to cherem, he's going to be obliterated. In that case, there is no erech in that instance, even though technically erech has nothing to do with the value of the individual. It has to do with, again, the charts and the tables. Nevertheless, in that case, you're exempted. So Rabba will use kol cherem for that limud to teach you that a person being taken out to be sentenced to death, there is no erech associated with them. Next Mishnah. Nara shenit arsa venit garsha. A young girl, Nara, who's entitled to a knas if she was raped. If she gets halachically engaged and then divorced, the same would be true if she was nit almana, if she became a widow. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer in la knas. She no longer is entitled to knas. Rabbi Ki Omer, yesh la knas. She does have knas, uknasa liatzma. But there is one change now, which is that she's on her own cognizance because she has been married and divorced now, and therefore her father no longer has entitlement to these payments. So in the past, yes, her father would have been entitled to the payment. Now she gets the payment, but she still is entitled to the payment because she's still a bitula. How do we know she's a bitula? Because she only had erusin and not nisuin. So we know she's still a bitula, and because of that, she's entitled to the knas. So Gemara wants to know, my time, the Rabbi Yossi Aglili. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Amar kara, asher lo orasa. Because it says in the pasuk that she was not engaged. Ha orasa, in la knas. Pretty straightforward. That says that in the pasuk that she was not engaged. That means that she was engaged. She's no longer entitled to the knas. Rabbi Kiva, asher lo orasa la'aviyah. That the way that you dash in the pasuk is that when she's not engaged, the monies go to her father. Ha orasa latzma. On the other hand, if she is engaged, then they are for her. She gets to keep them. So don't make the diuk that it's all or nothing, which is that when she's not engaged, she's entitled to knas. When she's not engaged, it's zero. No, it just changes who the beneficiary of the monies are. When she is not engaged, the beneficiary is her father. In the case where she is engaged, she is the beneficiary, she will get the knas. So Elomiata, the Gemara says, wait, you're trading on very thin ice here. Because we have another of limudim inside of these psukim by me'anes. One of them is ne'ara v'lo bogeret. It says in the pasuk, and everybody agrees that only a ne'ara gets knas, not a bogeret. Now, ketana is a machloket, but bogeret, everybody agrees she's not entitled. So we are medayek from the word ne'ara, ne'ara v'lo bogeret. Hachanami. So do the same thing that Rabbi Kiva just did. Don't say that ne'ara gets full knas, bogeret gets nothing, but rather, delatzma, that you say, when she's a ne'ara, the knas goes to her father. When she's a bogeret, there is knas, but just goes to her. Why don't you make that diyuk? Bitula v'lo biula. Say the same thing by the need for her to be a bitula in this case. If she's a bitula, the knas will be to her father. When she's a biula, instead of not having knas at all, hachinami delatzma, then she'll also get it, she'll be entitled to it. So you are on a slippery slope. If you're willing to be midayek from the words of our Shirlo or Asa, to differentiate between it going to her father versus going to her, you can do that with all the diukim of ne'ara, bitula. All of those requirements here will be subject to this differentiation, saying it all goes to her father in those cases. When it's not like that, it'll go to her. Ella legamre. It's pretty clear by the Yizadar limudim that it's a all or nothing. If she's a bitula, she's entitled to kenas. She's not a bitula, she's not entitled to kenas. She's a ne'ara, she's entitled to kenas. Bogeret, she's not entitled to kenas. Well, hachanami, so too, by orasa, you gotta say the same thing, which is it's the gamre, it's an all or nothing. If she is not engaged, she's entitled to kenas. If she is engaged, she's not entitled to kenas, and that's zero. So then, what's Rabbi Kiva's source now? Amar lecha Rabbi Kiva, hai lo orasa mi bayile. I need a shir lo orasa for a different limud, and therefore it's not available for that diuk. Look at etanya. Because you have a braita. Asher lo orasa prat v'ne'arash nitarsa v'nitgasha shein laknas divi Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Again, straightforward, this is Rabbi Yossi Aglili of our Mishnah, who learns the pasuk literally. When she's not engaged, she gets knas. When she is engaged, she's no longer entitled to knas. Rabbi Kiva Omer, yesh la knas. She gets knas, uknasa le'avia. And the knas goes to her father. Now this is clearly a stira to Rabbi Kiva in the Mishnah. Because Rabbi Kiva in the Mishnah says there is knas, but it goes to her. Here in the Braita, he says there is knas, it goes to Avia. The Gemara will postpone dealing with that till the second half of today's daf. But for right now, the Gemara is after what the limud is. But I didn't know thing. And it makes sense that her father should be granted the knas here. Hova Avia Zakai Bekesev Kidusha. Because the father would be entitled to her monies when he marries her off. Vavia Zakai Bekesev Knasa. Her father is also entitled to the money when the knas is paid. Ma kesef kidusha. In the case of kesef kidushim, afobish nitasav nitgarsha laviha. Even if she was halachically engaged and then got divorced, she still remains in her father's auspices. And because of that, if he then married her off again, he would be entitled to the kesef kidushim if he married her off again. So she is still considered to be under her father's auspices, and the monies that are gained from her being married off will be her father's entitlement. Af kesef knasa, af bish nitasa, v'nitgasha le'avia. So to over here, in terms of her getting engaged and divorced, her knas will still be there and it will still go to her father.
Does the pasuk say that after?
But she never left, because kiddushin is only a partial leaving of her father's house. So when she gets divorced, she returns, like for nidarim. By nidarim, but she's arusa, the father and the baal share the right for nullification. So if you pull the baal out by having gerushin, she returns to her father. So we see the precedent for that. So Gemara says, im kein, ma tamal omar asher lo orasa. So if that's the case, then what is asher lo orasa teaching us? If, according to Rabbi Kiva, from a logical argument, the knas would be paid to the father in this case, I don't need the pasuk at all to teach me asher lo orasa. Mufne lakish lo v'ladun emenu. It's open, available for a gzeirah shavah, because now it's extraneous. Since it's extraneous, I can create a gzeirah shavah. Never kan asher lo orasa, but never lalan asher lo orasa. It says asher lo orasa by the case in Parshat Ki Tesei of Me'anes. It also says asher lo orasa by the case of Mifateh in Parshat Mishpatim. And we know, we've already seen this limud before, that the Gemara draws a parallel between Mifateh and Me'anes to tell you that the dinim will be the same. And that's what Makan Nun. Just like by Me'anes, it tells us 50, so we know that the knas is 50. After halan nun, so too by Mifateh, it'll also be 50. Mal halan shkalim, just like it says by Mifateh, that the payment is made in shkalim. Afkan, so too over here, by the case of Me'anes, Be'imei Shkalim. So through the Gzeirah Shavua, we jointly learn between the two of them that it's Chamishim Kesef Shekel. That's what we learn out, because pieces of it are found by Me'anes, pieces of it are found by Mifateh. The Gzeirah Shavua brings them together and says, the total picture is 50 Shekel Kesef. So that we learn both from Mifateh and by Me'anes, that that's the penalty. Rabbi Akiva, Mai Chazit Dasher Lo Arasal Gzeirah Shavua, Ubetula lemute bula. According to Rabbi Akiva, why does he see that Asher lo rasa is the extraneous piece here? And that's what we learned for the Gzeirah Shavah. Why don't we say that bitula is extraneous? So Rabbi Akiva clearly says bitula means bitula and not bi'ula. But why does he pick? How does he know that Asher lo rasa is the extraneous piece and not bitula? Because we could have also been medayek la Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Asher lo rasa means when she's not engaged. When she is engaged, knas is gone. And then we could have said betula is for gzeirah shava, and a beula would be entitled to kenas. How do you know which one to pick? And that's the Gemara's question over here. Rekiva mai chazit tasher lo rasal gzeirah shava betula lemutei beula. Ema, let us say the other way around. Betula legzeirah shava. Betula is mentioned both by the case of mifateh and me'anes. That'll be the gzeirah shava. Vasher lo rasah prat lenarash nitar shava nitgasha. And he'll use literally asher lo rasah like Rabbi Yossi Aglili to be middayek. That only when she's not engaged. If she is engaged, she loses out the kenas. Now remember, we've seen this gzeirah shavah before, and the Gemara did use bitula, bitula. If you remember, we had the word bitula and the word ne'ara, and they were extraneous. There were three times that they appeared, one legufe, and then two of them for the limud. One of those limudim was a gzeirah shavah. Now, what the Gemara is saying is, why don't we use bitula, bitula, the gzeirah shavah? And then you'll have Asher lo rasah be freed up, and you can be medayek from there, like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. How does Rabbi Akiva know what to do? Now this, if you look at Tosva, brings up a fundamental question about Gzeirot Shavot, because in general, Gzeirot Shavot is only something that comes through Mitzorah. It's not something that Adam Miatzmo, a person can't make it up, so why is the Gemara asking? Oh, why is he using the Gzeirot Shavot Asher lo rasah? Let's use the Gzeirot Shavot Bitula. He has a Mitzorah, that it was Asher lo rasah, not Bitula. How can the Gemara ask, or even propose a question like that? This has to do with a broader question of how Mesorah works and Gezerah Shavah work. And that is, many times the Gemara has pieces of information and they're trying to back into the answer. What the Gemara seemingly knows over here, that there's a Gezerah Shavah between Me'anes and Mifateh. They just don't know how it works or which words are the Gezerah Shavah. So they have a Mesorah about a Gezerah Shavah, they just don't know how to execute on that Gezerah Shavah. So that's the Mesorah. The Mesorah is, there is a Gezerah Shavah. Sometimes we'll have it the other way around. There's a Mesorah that these words are Gzeirah Shavah. We just don't know what they mean or what the Gzeirah Shavah is teaching us. I mean that in the Mesorah, many times they have different pieces of the puzzle and they're trying to solve for the missing piece. So that's what Tosafot suggests over here, that they're trying to solve for the missing piece. We know there is a Gzeirah Shavah. Which words make up that Gzeirah Shavah? Now, Tosafot Ishanim over here that's quoted above also notes that Rabbi Kiva needs the Limudim of Bitula and the Arad, the extraneous pieces of it, for the limudim that we learned earlier, again, that it's prat l'chayve lavin, prat l'chayve asay, and all the other limudim that we had over there. And therefore, the gzeirah shavah that he's using is for the core word bitula. And if that's the case, then he would eliminate the diuk over here. By using it as a gzeirah shavah, you no longer have bitula the gufe. You no longer have bitula as the core part of the pasuk to teach you that it's about a bitula, because you're using it for a gzeirah shavah. And since you're using it for a gzeirah shavah, it's no longer available to midayek. Bitula, yes. Bi'ula, no. Because otherwise, Rabbi Kiva would still have the word bitula left over to teach you that diuk of bitula le bi'ula. So he's clearly using the core word in the pasuk that we left, chad the gufe, that we left in the past. He's using that for the gzeirah shavah. So Gemara says, Mistavra asher lo orasa the gzeirah shavah. Makes more sense to say asher lo rasa is for the gzeirah shavah. Sharini akore ba nara bitula. Because then I can be mitayim the rest of the pasuk, which is nara bitula. I can take everything else literally, nara bitula, because a girl who is lo arusa, or even arusa, can still be a nara bitula. So therefore, it's not a problem. But, adraba, Gemara says bitula gzeirah shavah. Sharini akore ba asher lo rasa. Why don't I say that the bitula is the gzeirah shavah? And even if she is a bi'ula, does not mean that she is an arusa. She can still be an ara, she can still be a lo arusa, and be a bi'ula. Who says that you can't be mekayim it the other way, with the limud being just the other way? So, ha, ishtani gufa, ha, lo ishtani gufa. Very simple difference over here. The difference is that there's a bodily change in one of these instances. The other change is a halachic change. So when a woman goes from being a bitula to a bi'ula, that's a physical change in her body. That physical change is significant. Therefore, I'm going to say bitula velo bi'ula. On the other hand, asher lo orasa versus being orasa, whether she is engaged or not engaged, that's simply a halachic status in change. It's not a physical change in her body, so it's less significant. Therefore, Rabbi Kiva sees asher lo orasa being not exact, and therefore we'll use it for the gzereshava, versus bitula being exact. Now, what you'll have to argue is the same thing by Nara and Bogeret, because he's lurking at Nara and Bogeret saying that Nara versus Bogeret. So why what's the difference there? Now, we've seen this before in the Gemara, that there's actually a physical difference there as well. Shtei Sarot is from Ketana to Nara. Nara is already over the age. But from Nara to Bogeret, we've seen before that there are physical changes in the body, partly to do with puberty, the extension or the completion of puberty, as well as the fact that her bitulim are reduced. That's what Gemara knows. There's a physical change in the woman. And therefore, even from Nara to Bogeret, there is a physical change. Therefore, Rabbi Kiva takes bitula and ne'ara literally and says it must be a bitula, not a bi'ula, ne'ara, not a bogeret, because otherwise you would have a physical change in the woman and it would be absent from differentiating that in the pasuk. On the other hand, orasa to lorasa, he's going to use for gzer shava, because there, if you took it literally, the change is only a halachic change, it's not a physical change in the woman. All right, now the Gemara says, v'Rabbi Yossi Aglili, hai sevara minale. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, how does he know the gzer shava between Me'anes and Mifateh? Because he takes Asher Lo Rasa literally, that means it's not available for Gzer Shava. Nafkalei Meditani, Kesef Ishkol, Kemor HaBitulot. He learns it out the way that we learned it earlier in the Masechta, which is Kesef Ishkol, Kemohar HaBitulot, Sheyeze Kemor HaBitulot, Umohar HaBitulot, Kezeh. That the payment or the compensation for the Bitulot will be like this, and this will be like the compensation for the Bitulot. Again, it's referencing from here to Me'anes and from Me'anes back to Mifateh. Kazik. So that would make it that they are equated. Since they are equated, or at least the compensation is equated, therefore, we'll learn out Chamishim Kesef Shekel Kesef from the fact that it says Kemor HaBitulot. So now the Gemara goes back to the fundamental problem, which is really the big question. Kasha de Rabbi Kiva, de Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva in the Braita says the Knas goes to the father. Rabbi Kiva in our Mishnah says the Knas goes to the girl. So how do we reconcile that? The Gemara says, Trei Tanae Vali B'de Rabbi Kiva. The Gemara gives a very simple answer, which is it's two Tanaim according to Rabbi Kiva. Maybe that's why they didn't rush to answer it. They're just simply saying it's two different opinions in Rabbi Akiva. Now the Gemara says, okay, let's understand what those two opinions are. Bishlama Rabbi Kiva de Matanitin. Rabbi Kiva a Mishnah. Loachi Gzei Reshava Mafkele de Kra Mi Pshatei. The Gzei Reshava comes and leaves the Pshat of the Pasuk somewhat intact. It says it doesn't take it out of the Pshatei the Gamrei. Why? Because the Gzeira Shava teaches you that asher lo rasa, between mifateh and me'anes, that the payment or the monetary payment is the same, which is chamishim shekel kesef. Then, still left intact is asher lo rasa. It has some meaning in the pasuk. It may not have its full meaning, like Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, but it has some meaning, which is, there is a change. When she's asher lo rasa, the knas goes to her father. When she is orasan, the knas goes to her. So therefore, the pasuk still has meaning. Elo le Rabbi Kiva de Braita. According to Rabbi Kiva de Braita, Achik Zera Shava, Umafka Mipshate de Gamre. Gzera Shava comes, and these words have no meaning whatsoever. Gzera Shava says, we connect between Mifateh and Me'anes. Asher lo orasa, what impact does that have on this case at all? The payment still goes to her father. Nothing changed between her being not engaged and being engaged halakhically. There is no impact whatsoever. That means that it's written in the pasuk for no reason whatsoever. I mean, it's there for the Gzeres Shavah. But even if it's there for the Gzeres Shavah, it should have some meaning in the pasuk. It should have some impact on the case. In the Braita, that's not the case. We eliminate it entirely. Now, Tosafot talks about this in general, because what type of question is this? If it's there for the Gzeres Shavah, that's why it's there. It's there for the Gzeres Shavah. Why does it have to have the Pshatei Dekra? Gosafot over here says that it depends on the nature of the pshat. Meaning that if the Gzeres Shava completely eliminates the pshat, or actually contradicts the pshat, then you have to start to think about why are those words chosen and you could have used other words. On the other hand, if at least there's some meaning to the words, then you understand why the pasuk used these words, and you could still have a Gzeres Shava that eliminates the pshat, but just not the gamrei. So over here, where you have the Braita eliminate the pshat, the gamrei, Why are you using these words? These words have no meaning. And in a sense, it's going against the pshat. The pshat is that when she's not engaged, she's entitled. When she is engaged, she's not entitled. You just eliminated that completely and now said that it's irrelevant whether she's engaged or not engaged. That's going completely against the pshat. At least if the Gzeirah Shavah just adds on or enhances, that's one thing. Over here, it's actually wiping it out entirely. Other places, the Gemara finds it, and it goes against the actual pshat. It's in contradiction to the pshat. It eliminates the pshat, gamri, and contradicts it. But over here, it's going to eliminate its meaning. Amar Anachmar Yitzhak, Kori Bey, Asher Lo Arusa. We're going to read the pasuk slightly different, which is that instead of saying Asher Lo Arusa, which is in the past tense, it says Asher Lo Arusa in the present tense. So Asher Lo Arusa in the past tense is the deal that Rabbi Yossi Aglidis makes, which is, she wasn't engaged prior, therefore she's entitled to Kenas. If she was engaged prior to this point in time, then she would not be entitled to Kenas. If you change it to Asher Lo Arusa, Arusa means in the present. Is she engaged in the present or not engaged in the present? If she's not engaged in the present, she's entitled to Kenas. If she is engaged in the present, she will not be entitled to Kenas. Arusa Batskilahi. Forget about Kenas. Someone who rapes a Nara Bitula Arusa is subject to the death penalty, and even a more severe death penalty than a usual extramarital affair. Here, he's subject to skila. This is a very chamur infraction. And if the woman was a willing participant, then she would be subject to the mita as well. So why are we talking about monetary compensation over here? We're talking about a death penalty. Why does it matter that she's engaged anymore? If she's engaged, goodbye to the knas, because we're commonly the rabbaminei. It's also written by Mifateh, and it says Asher Lo Arusa, so you have to deal with it there. So that's one if she's willing. On the other hand, the payment of the knas comes from the man. And he is a manes. He's the one who's subject to the death penalty, whether or not she is a willing participant. So he's going to be chayav skila. There's going to be no knas paid over here. So Gemara says, Sakatat kamina hoil v'chidishu shechidsha torabi knas. So this again, the same thing that we said before. There's a chidish by knas. That knas might have to be paid even in the face of kamali derabi minei. So afgav de mikdal mishalim, even though he's subject to the death penalty, he'll have to pay. And therefore, kamash malon, that Asher Lo Arusa teaches you that if she is an Arusa, there is no Kenas being paid here. So even though it would have been knocked out from Kamalei D'Rabbi Minei, we would have thought there's an exception to Kamalei D'Rabbi Minei because Kenas is an exception to all the rules. Maybe you'd have to pay even though there was a death penalty. Along comes the Pasuk and teaches you that if she's engaged, there will be no Kenas. Well, if she's currently engaged. That way you can now learn the Pasuk Kipshat A, which is that the pshat of the pasuk still has meaning, and the gzeirah shavah has, but you will not have a diuk to change who the beneficiary of the knas is, and you will not have a diuk to say that if she was engaged prior, that she's no longer entitled to knas. You will not learn like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, you will not learn like Rabbi Kiva of the Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva the Bright says that this is the meaning of Asher Lo Arusa. Now, not literally that they are changing the meaning of the pasuk from past to present, but rather that sometimes the Tanakh uses Asher Lo Arusa to mean both past and present. It has a meaning in the present, even though it's speaking as orasa, which seemingly is the past. So it's not a wholesale change. It's just a change of perspective about whether it's talking about the past or the present. Ularabo damar chidushu shechidsha torabi knas avagav demikdal mishalim. What about Rabo, who says that by the case of knas, we don't invoke kamalei derabi minei, you have to pay a knas. Avagav demikdal mishalim, if you have a death penalty, you will pay. Ma'igal meimar. Then what are you going to do with this? Again, Asher Lo Arusa. What is the pshat of the pasuk? Sabalak Rabbi Akiva the Matznitin. Enochanami. Rabba will not fit into Rabbi Akiva the Braita. He'll only fit into Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah, because Rabbi Akiva the Braita then would lose a meaning to the pshat of Asher Lo Arusa. Right? Tan Rabbanan. Knasalami. Who does the knas go to? Leavia. We have one Braita that says to her father. Veshamim. That's not. And we have one Braita that says that goes to her. That's ma, amai. Why does she get the knas? The pasuk is pretty clear that it goes to the avia nara, it goes to the father. So here, we thought this was talking about a regular case of me'anes or a mifateh. No, this is a case with a woman who had been previously engaged and divorced. And these two brightot are arguing in the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Who is entitled to the knas now? Is the entitlement of the knas to the father? Is he the beneficiary? Or is it the daughter? Rabbi Kiva, the Mishnah says the beneficiary is the daughter. And Rabbi Kiva, the Braita, says the beneficiary is the father. And that's what the Braita are arguing about. Which Rabbi Kiva is right? Is the Rabbi Kiva the Mishnah or Rabbi Kiva the Braita? Amar Abayi. Bala Umeita Patur. If he is Maneser, and then she dies, he does not have to pay the Knas. Shinemar Binatan Lavi Hanara Velo Lavi Meita. In that you give it to the father of the Ne'ara, Ne'ara implying that she is still around, she's a Ne'ara, and not to the father of the one who has passed away. Before he has the ability to bring the assailant to trial, the girl passes away. In that case, he will not be entitled to connect the Knas anymore because he can no longer save Ne'atan Aviha Ne'ara, because it's really Aviha Meita now. The Gemara says, Milta de Pshitu Lele Abaye, something that is straightforward for Abaye, Mibaye Lele Rava. Rava has a question about this. The Bai Rava, Rava queried, Yesh beggar bekever, or ain't beggar bekever? Can a girl age in the grave, or could she not age in the grave? Yesh beggar bekever, if she ages in the grave, ubidana banahavi, then the knas will belong to her child. Odilma ain't beggar bekever, maybe there is no aging in the kever, udaviahavi, and therefore the knas belongs to the father, because the act was perpetrated when she was a na'ara. When she was a Na'ara, that makes it clear that the entitled party is the father, because it's Lavia Na'ara. Now she passed away. Now that she's passed away, what happens with this Knas? Truthfully, now she's already a Bogeret. If she is a Bogeret, she's entitled to the monies now, because she's no longer under the auspices of her father. She becomes independent as a Bogeret. So if she's independent now, because technically she aged in the grave, then the party that's entitled to this is her son, her inheritor. On the other hand, if there is no aging in the grave, then she still remains, quote-unquote, a ni'ara. And if that's the case, then the entitled party here is the father. Now, there are a number of questions to ask about this. The first of which is, how does she have a child if she is a bitula? Because the only way to be subject to knas is if you're a bitula. So how is it possible that she has a child over here? That will be the subject of tomorrow's Gemara, and we won't deal with that now. The other question that has to be asked over here is, why is her son entitled to the Knas at all? We have a general principle, which is, Ein Morishim et HaKnas. You do not inherit Knas. Knas belongs to the party that was wronged, and it is not passed along. Now, if the party was already brought to trial, and the obligation of the Knas was already determined, then there is inheriting the Knas, because it was changed from a penalty to a monetary obligation by being adjudicated in Beit Din. So once Beit Din has made the decision that the Knas has to be paid, it becomes a monetary obligation, and therefore that can be inherited. But in a case where they have yet to come to trial, then there is no inheriting of the Knas, because that's a principle that we have in other places in Shas, that Ein Morish et HaKnas. So there are different answers given by the Rishonim. There's a big Tosafot here that tries to deal with it. One of the answers is, maybe they were omed Beit Din. Maybe they already adjudicated the case, and that's why it's a monetary obligation, not a knas. The re suggests it has to do with the fact that there are other payments here besides the knas. There's boshet and pagam. So maybe we're talking about the boshet and pagam over here, not the knas itself, because you can't be marish the knas. You can only have the boshet and the pagam, which are monetary obligations, be passed along. Or Tosafot says that it could have asked that question, and it didn't ask that question because it had a better question, which is, how does she have a son at all? All right, so we're going to stop here at the bottom of Lamed Chet Amud Bet.